This is the city council meeting, it's Monday, April 7th, 7:00 PM.
And call this meeting to order, the April 6th, 2015 workshop of the Othello City Council. Would you all please rise? Kim Johnson will lead us in prayer and then the Pledge of Allegiance.
Father God, we thank you very much for this honor that you've given us. We thank you for the many blessings that you have bestowed upon the city, that you could be with us here tonight in our decision making, that we make good and wise decisions for the future of this city. For this, we pray in the name of God.
Allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
May be seated. Moving to item 1.03, roll call. I see that all of our council is present tonight, so we'll move on to item 1.04, citizen input. Is there any citizen here who would like to give input to the Othello City Council? We would allow you 5 minutes if you'd please raise your hand, be recognized, state your name and address for the record. Please move forward to the microphone, and you would have 5 minutes to address the Othello City Council. Is there anyone here who desires to address council tonight? Okay, seeing none, we'll move on to item 2, current business, 2.01. Stephen McFadden has an update with the recent coalition of governments that has gone together in hiring the Boyd Company. So Steve, he has a presentation tonight, so go ahead, Steve.
Good evening, how are you all this evening?
Good.
So the Boyd Project was a little bit of a self-examination and a leap of faith, countywide. As you know, I came before you last winter and asked you to join and support a project that the Adams County Development Council and the Adams County Commissioners had determined was a necessary step in order for us to consider the ability to grow in terms of jobs, business, and industry in the future. So in that process, we retained a national firm, the Boyd Company out of Princeton, New Jersey. And what we'll do tonight is go over primarily the Blueprint for Action report, which is a countywide document. I did give you a second report, I'm going to make reference to that as we go along, and the reason I'm doing that is I would like you to see the kind of document we intend to pursue if we can all settle on an industry target we want to do a cost analysis study on, specific to the Othello, Port of Othello area for recruitment purposes. So Blueprint for Action, this is a summary of the Boyd Company report. You have both a PDF file, and I've given you a hard copy file as well of this. This 10-slide presentation is really my personal summary of what the Boyd Project has done so far and what his findings have been with regard to potential industry sector targets and then what our next steps are. So the overall objectives of the entire Boyd process are noted here. First off, an independent third-party industry marketing recommendation, meaning looking at Adams County without any bias, making a decision about what business and industry could site here successfully based on business and industry that's already here and some of the other current economic factors, including, for instance, workforce. And I'm sure over the years, as council members, you've heard about issues with regard to workforce and issues with regard to infrastructure, and both of those do come up in this process, and they do lay out some work for us. One of the big parts of the study was that Boyd was going to look at Adams County, was going to do at least one target industry cost comparative, and it was either going to be on distribution centers or food processing. As you know, you have food processing present already here in the Othello area, and in talking with the existing food processors and looking at workforce issues, the Boyd Company proceeded with a distribution center cost comparative, which I gave you that document, did determine that if the distribution center was located on the Interstate 90 US 395 corridor in Adams County, it says right so on the report, that we would be one of the most affordable regions in the United States. The cost comparative analysis has the city of Ritzville, Ritzville zip code, compared to 24 other cities in the nation, many of them much larger in population than the entire county population. But what we found out is, bottom line, we're the most affordable site out of those 25 cities on the West Coast, second most affordable site in the nation, and out of the 25 cities, if we use Big Bend Power, we are the most affordable site for electricity rates. National industry and media support, we've had about a dozen articles show up all across the United States as a result of that cost comparative analysis done on distribution centers. As a result of that, we've had six corporations that have asked the board report for the full document based on the media. In the Pacific Northwest, that study was featured in an article in the Daily Journal of Commerce out of Seattle. It showed the comparison between the city of Kent in the city of Ritzville, and Ritzville far and away is more economical than the city of Kent to locate a distribution center. We were really looking for documents like that that create sales tools. And in the coming month or two, I'd like to have another one of those types of documents done on an industry sector aiming at the Port of Othello and the city of Othello that we can also carry as a sales tool. Blueprint for Action Report is what we're going to go through tonight. The other element to know is that the Boyd Company will continue to respond to corporation and site sector inquiries on behalf of Adams County for up to 2 years. And when I say 2 years, we're not paying for their services beyond the 6 month support services contract that we have, but the cost analysis study, the numbers are viable for up to 24 months. They are willing and committed to representing those numbers. Site Selector calls them and says, hey, can you talk to me about this report? He will do so. Site Selector calls us and says, where did you get the numbers? They'll accept a phone call forward or an email forward from us. These are the partners. It's a $78,500 total contract. These are the six entities that are contributing to that process. As you know, the city of Othello's investment is $10,000. In December, Jack Boyd, the principal owner of the corporation, came here and conducted interviews, confidential industry interviews, with each of these groups that you see here. And the purpose for those interviews is to gather labor data, economic data, wage data, things that he needed to promise confidentiality to each of those industries before they would open the door and disclose things such as the terms of their labor union agreements. But I can tell you that I have the list of all the questions that were asked. I just don't have the answers. But he provides in the report, in the back of the blueprint, some summaries of what the good parts are and what the challenging parts are going forward. And so if you got that far in the report, you would have saw that there are good things here. There are some things we need to work on. This is a diverse group. It is the largest employers. It is basically ag-related. Ag is the number one industry in our county, and it stands to reason that they drive the large amount of our employment base. In fact, Simplot, J.R. Simplot and McCain Foods USA employ about a total of 1,000 employees just in those two operations. When we had a stakeholder luncheon here and a meeting up in Ritzville, these are individuals representing a number of the agencies that serve on the ACDC board who have sat down and been involved in a conversation with Jack Boyd before the study was ever prepared and submitted to us. You can see that at the time, Councilmember Johnson was the chair of ACDC, Dave Allman from West Tecna, Pat Simmons, who is the new chair of ACDC, was there, Mike Schrag from Ritzville, Terry Thompson, who's on the ACDC Executive Committee and represents the Port of Othello, Wade Ferris from the City of Othello, Joey Hansen from ACDC, Mayor Logan, Community Development Director Travis Goddard, Adams County Commissioner John Marshall, who is on the ACDC board, and then myself. Here are the key strengths that the Boyd Report found in its process. The Adams County cost structures are, quote, attractively low by regional and national standards. And what that means is a number of factors, land, utilities, the actual wages that need to be paid to production and manufacturing and industrial workers are competitive. Just the cost analysis on distribution centers told us that we can compete in a number of industry arenas based simply on the fact that we're not in a metropolitan community. And when you look at the distribution center report, you'll see East Coast, West Coast, middle of the nation, there's a number of very large cities in that report. There are four or five smaller population communities, and yet the numbers in Adams County were pretty telling. Food processing is the largest employment sector. Transportation and warehousing are economic drivers here, directly related to agriculture and food processing. Big Bend Electric Cooperative is a major asset, not only with its competitive electricity rates, but also because it's green hydroelectric power, and that's considered highly attractive these days nationwide to anyone looking to site a major industrial facility. And then finally, the public school system, both in Othello and Ritzville, got good marks from the employers that were interviewed in this process. Challenges. Some things here that shouldn't be new to you all. Lack of natural gas capacity at Othello and the Port of Othello. We have, in our investigation, found tentatively a solution to that, and that's standby fuel systems using liquid natural gas. We met with two corporations, one of them that's already established a business location on the west side of the state, who can design and construct small-scale or large-scale liquid natural gas storage, which would allow it to be A, standby fuel, or B, primary fuel, if that business or, say, the port decided it wanted to add liquid natural gas to its utility services. Securing future supply of high-volume water for food processing operations, that's not a new discussion for you all as you struggle with your current water issues. But we must be aware that if we're looking at the traditional model of food processor, we have to make sure that we have the ability to deliver high volume water and to also handle high volume wastewater. So that's the next one, need for future industrial wastewater processing capabilities. Another trend nationally is pollution prevention programs. And this is sort of an industry trend where a variety of industries are now establishing best practices in conjunction with their industrial expansion. It relates directly to water and wastewater use. For instance, Microsoft over in Quincy, when they first constructed their data center, they're using a lot of water, pumping it right out into the wastewater system. They have since backed up and employed new technology, because really all their water is doing is being used to cool all of the server stacks that are inside of their data centers. So they now have a very large cooling tower, which allows them to flow the water, bring it out into the cooling tower, circulate it, lower its temperature, has a certain amount of evaporation, but they turn right around and recycle it back into the building. That's a pollution prevention program. Housing. And there's a lot of different points of view on this particular one, as I found out in the last few weeks, but the issue in the study was that your large employers are having a hard time getting their technical and management level talent to actually live in Adams County versus living in Grant County. There have been employees and management level living as far away as Walla Walla, Tri-Cities, coming in, collecting a paycheck, spending that money in another county. Benefits us if we can get them to live here and stay here because they'll be active members of your community. So in the book, Blueprint for Action, there are these proposed industry targets. As you can see from the cost analysis document that I gave you, it makes good sense to start recruiting distribution and warehousing facilities. But in the blueprint, there's a list of food and beverage processors that the Boyd Group also feels are highly successful opportunities for us to recruit. And he broke it down this way so that you can see that there are a number of different types of food and beverage processing industries out there. Not all of them are high volume users in their processing. But hummus production, about 90% of all the hummus that's made is using chickpeas that are grown in a palouse, but yet the product is not manufactured in Washington State. Hummus is actually manufactured in the South. So why wouldn't we try to recruit Sabra or one of the other national or regional corporations that are making very trendy hummus food products and have them make it here right where the supply is? It eliminates a lot of their shipping costs to have it sent halfway across the United States. The energy bar and snack industry, if you're familiar with Clif Bar, then you may have heard in the news earlier in the month of March that Clif Bar, which is a California corporation, has just broke ground on a $90 million facility in Twin Falls, Idaho. Why is a California corporation expanding to Twin Falls, Idaho? Well, what they're doing is constructing a new state-of-the-art bakery for their product, and they're doing it in a state where it's very cost-effective to do so. And currently in California, industry expansion is really struggling, not only as a result of the water issues in California, but all of the rest of the issues that are following that, including overall taxation. There are about 3,500 food processors in the state of California. We think it's wise to go after our fair share of those as they look to relocate out of the state of California and find more affordable operations. The Clif Bar Corporation was basically a husband-wife team, and these folks are now constructing a $90 million facility and creating 200 brand new jobs in Twin Falls, Idaho. And this is a state-of-the-art facility, so they're hiring a lot of high-tech employees to be able to operate the computer systems and the machinery that the computers currently will operate. Private label marketing. If you're familiar with Shaker Cherries, then you know what a private label is in food manufacturing. So you could classify Shaker Cherries as an added value agriculture business. We think that there's plenty of room for growth and marketing there. We actually have some added value agriculture businesses in our county. For instance, Tart is smart, Killian Corn. Up in Ritzville, we have Camelina Oils, which Old World Oils, which is using camelina. So there are entrepreneurs out there that could eventually lead to larger manufacturing operations, still again around agriculture and food processing. Functional foods and nutraceuticals. If you're familiar with Amway, then you know one of the largest nutraceutical corporations in the world. Amway, not too long ago, opened a brand new facility in Quincy, again in the Port of Quincy. And one of the reasons for that is the Pacific Northwest is one of the locations that grows most of the ingredients necessary for the nutraceuticals. And the healthcare craze is really about, you know, healthy foods, healthy vitamins, and the types of things that don't have a lot of processing and don't have a lot of foreign chemicals or ingredients in them. Craft sodas, much like the current wine and microbrew and now hard cider industry on the opposite side. There's also a fairly growing niche in the nation with regard to craft sodas. And then finally, in food processing of freshwater aquaculture, and that's fish farming, growing fish for restaurants and grocery stores and for overseas markets. And that is actively being done in the state of Washington, primarily over on the west side currently. Another thought that the Boyd Group had as a result of knowing the region is that with a tremendous amount of medical and biomedical studies being currently done down in the Tri-Cities region, the manufacturer of medical devices and supplies could successfully site in Adams County and do so, again, at a significant cost savings. There are a number of them already in a cluster in Spokane, but the cost to operate in Spokane is far higher than it would be to operate down here in Adams County. Contact center industry. If you're familiar with call centers, then you probably know that a number of major corporations took their call centers out of the United States. Well, now we're having a reshoring effect. I will go on record as telling you this is the one I'm least excited about, simply because call centers have a tendency to have high volume turnover. They don't pay the kinds of wages we'd really like to create, and it's a very competitive market. So David McFadden, who is the president of Yakima County Development Association, no relation to me, has been there for about 20 years. And more than half of the call centers that they've recruited to the Yakima area have since left. The one thing that Boyd thought would be possible here is the establishment of a bilingual call center that may quite very well be a mid-level employer that we could find. It might be a small call center, much like Washington Dental is up in Paulville. Agricultural drone manufacturing for crop management. Ag drones are going to become big business in the Pacific Northwest, and as the federal government allows regulations for drones, we saw in January and February at the ag shows in Spokane, Pasco, that there are a number of vendors already showing up at the ag shows selling their ag drones and selling their technology. Why couldn't we get an agricultural drone manufacturer to site at the Othello Airport? And then finally, Jack Boyd travels all over the United States and all over Canada, and he suggested a retail franchise that's looking to move into the northern portion of the United States, and that's Tim Hortons, which is a coffee shop, bakery, cafe. He saw that as an alternative competitor to Starbucks in Washington State. So those are the industries that, based on analysis, the Boyd Group says should be successfully recruited here. What I'm asking you to think about is which one of these sectors would you want to do a cost comparison, cost analysis. I believe personally that even though we're still battling water issues, that the mecca of food and beverage processing pays homage to what we already are, and that's an ag industry-based county. I think it gives us the largest variety of opportunities for recruitment. That doesn't mean that ACDC and I will not be looking at all of these others and making efforts and doing outreach, but if we're going to travel the nation to do sales recruitment, we should ought to make sure that we spend our money wisely. And so my bosses, the Adams County Commissioners, have said, when you go on recruiting missions, you better make sure you're going after a really viable industry. Distribution centers clearly is a viable industry for us to chase, and I believe that food and beverage processing will always be a viable industry for us to chase. You're going to have to do some planning, you're going to have to do some infrastructure-related issues, and like Mayor Logan has said on many occasions in my presence, this is going to take a collective collaboration to get work done, because we're going to have to look to our state leadership to support us in the infrastructure avenues as we grow. Next steps. I'd like you and the port to support the selection of one of those recommended industry sectors so that we can proceed with getting a cost comparative study done. I believe that a clear vision is necessary countywide. You are currently embarking on a very ambitious comprehensive planning study. I applaud you for that, and let me tell you why. 3 weeks ago, we were in Olympia on behalf of the Con Am Interchange, which is a project not in our county, but it serves employers both in our county and in Grant County, as Columbia Basin Railroad hauls rail cars down to the Columbia Interchange, Con Am Interchange, which then in turn put those rail car loads on the Burlington Northern Class 1 mainline rail. While we were over there, I had an opportunity to visit with Senator Sessler. And the Senator had some really sage advice for me. And it was based on the fact that as a majority leader for the first time in his 23-year career in Olympia, he does not have any requests for infrastructure or project funding sitting on his desk from anyone in Adams County. And pointed out that that's a shame. And what he also said was, everyone who does come seeking funding comes through the door with a very clear plan. They come in with a regional team and a local team and a tremendous amount of documented support. And it's difficult to turn down viable project requests when you've done your homework, as we saw with the Con Am Interchange project, which has already successfully asked both the House and the Senate to put a $5 million funding earmark in the proposed transportation package for a project that hasn't even got a study yet or its final engineering document. But the City of Con Am and the Con Am Interchange Coalition from three counties has been very successful at conveying the message. This interchange is important. It has 60 shippers on the Columbia Basin Railroad that it represents. It's tied to 7,000 jobs in Grant and Adams County. And so both sides, the House and the Senate, have been supportive thus far, and assuming that a transportation package is approved in Olympia, there should be a $5 million earmark in there for the Connell Interchange's new construction, which makes it almost possible to move forward with construction as early as 2016 and stay ahead of the double tracking process that Burlington Northern is doing. It's a very clear example to me where we really need to ramp up our game, and we need to be polished, and we need to be capable of going to Olympia and capable of talking to Washington, D.C. about projects that are near and dear, documented and important to all of us in terms of economic development. In the near future, we're going to need to do a labor force analysis. The countywide regional labor analysis will provide the accurate sales data that I need that says we can deliver the jobs that you need for your business or industry if you site manage county. All of the county EDCs around us currently have a similar study that allows them to point out that in eastern Washington, you can recruit from 70 to 90 miles away versus downtown Seattle that has a much different type of demographic. And then finally, we need to develop, rehearse, and implement a proven ACDC site selector process. And we need that because when that first site selector comes, if we haven't developed a plan, developed the message, and rehearsed it, we will be really stumbling when a corporate executive is standing in front of us asking us, what's the current capacity of your sewer treatment plant? How much water a day can you deliver to us for a food processing operation? Do you have 350 acres flat ground available in Adams County for a mushroom greenhouse? And I just went through that process here a couple of weeks ago, and it was very difficult to answer the Department of Commerce questions because we're not there yet. We need to get there, and we need to get there as a team, and it starts from ACDC and Adams County and the city of Othello and all the other cities and towns in the port. It has to be collective. We have to be able to call on Mayor Logan to attend a meeting with elected leadership on behalf of a project perhaps proposed for Washtenaw or for Lynn, but we need to have a strike team, and we need to begin building that team because I intend to start recruiting before this year is out. One last little thing. Bill Birdie had a little piece of advice for me the other day, and I'm tying it to growing apples. Economic development is a long-term commitment. It's like growing an apple tree. It requires patience and a long-term commitment if you want to bear fruit. The Farmer's Almanac says a standard-sized apple tree will bear fruit in 5 to 8 months. Today, we are just now in the fifth month of this new collaborative countywide economic development effort.
Very good. Thank you, Steve.
Do you have any questions for me? I'm more than happy to talk about the distribution center report if you'd like to hear a little bit about that as well.
I do. Are we limited to one on our cost comparative analysis?
The current plan is for Adams County to fund the next $25,000 study cost. So we want to wisely use that $25,000 investment at the most successful opportunity. Over time, I think, Mayor, that we should do more of them. But, you know, right out of the box, if I had six cost comparative studies, it would be hard for me as a sales guy to go door to door in six different industries. I'm keyed and set to start traveling for distribution center recruitment, and I intend to be attending two of the large food processing conventions next January, February. I just think we have to be in front of them. Everyone around us is in front of them, and if we're not in the game, we're going to get passed over. If I had a cost analysis on food and beverage processing that said that we're one of the most economical locations, we could probably silence the notion that Grant County PUD puts us out of contention. Right now, the Big Bend electric rates are not as reasonable as Grant County PUD, but they're very, very close, within a few pennies kilowatt hour, and that's why we're able to have the rating that we did. We purposely didn't want to do any free advertising for the Grant County PUD, so you don't see them in the cost analysis. We didn't want that to occur. But we are getting a lot of good feedback on that cost analysis report. And I can tell you that in addition to doing the cost analysis, our board contract also came with the element of national promotion. So Boyd's carrying this study all over the United States to editors of both industry publications and major daily newspapers in the cities where that were included in this report. I had an email from him today and a couple of very long conversations with him last week. He made outreach today to all of our national elected leadership and is scheduling visitations in Washington, D.C. He's hopeful to get an opportunity to see not only Senator Murray, but also Senator Cantwell and Congressman Newhouse, give all of them copies of these reports, make them aware that we're in the game to recruit new business and industry and have new jobs and new employers located in Adams County. It's a very complex matrix, this whole process of recruitment. And as I come up to speed, and as I'm starting to have a lot of outside contact, the one thing that I come back to is that my friend and the majority leader said to me, you need a good plan, you need a strong team, and then you can bring me projects, and we can do things to help my home county. That tells me that every other county in the state is asking for funding for major infrastructure projects. Port of Warden has a $1.1 million project. It's a rail line improvement project in place in the transportation package. Even more impressive, Port of Moses Lake has a $20 million rail item in the other line item currently in the transportation package, and that's to rehab and construct 7 miles of new railroad to allow the Columbia Basin Railroad to serve even more employers over in Grant County. We're not asking for those projects. We need to be. The county commissioners have suggested informally to the port that maybe we need to be talking about how to get industrial wastewater treatment out of Bruce. It's not present. It's the next big thing necessary to really recruit large employers, especially food processors, out of Bruce. I have a proposal, an RFP, from a major industry that's looked at Adams County and has since moved on, that in the report it said it's very critical that you can handle 1.3 million gallons of wastewater daily. And if you're not currently capable of handling it, we're going to have to look elsewhere because that needs to be in place at the time we open. So that puts industrial wastewater perhaps in front of natural gas as an issue.
Very comprehensive. We really appreciate your presentation. Could you clarify, it says here, distribute on the proposed industry targets, Steve. Distribution and warehousing cost analysis is already complete on that section.
That's the report that you have. The second report I gave you is the distribution center cost analysis. I wanted you to see how that was done. It breaks down the cost analysis report in a very detailed manner in a set of exhibits in the back of that report. There are a number of series, but in each series there's an exhibit one that looks at all of the overall costs. So just for the sake of discussion, this study was designed on a 500,000 square foot distribution center built on 35 acres, hiring 150 non-exempt employees. The cost to buy the ground, construct the facility, and operate for 1 year was $11,351,481 in RISPA. You'll also see Exhibit 2, Comparative Annual Labor Costs. It breaks down all of the positions and the quantity by position in that report. $14.16 an hour is the average wage over across of those 150 employees. The highest wage is $20.29 an hour for maintenance electricians. Warehouse construction and amortization costs is also included in there. A breakdown of the utility rate comparison is also there. And if you're looking at those, I mean, you can certainly see that we're very, very, very competitive in the utility costs. And I want to say something about Avista. We're very competitive using Avista rates. Avista rates are below the vast majority of the rates quoted in this study as well. It just happens that Big Bend Electric, a rural electric cooperative, has the best rates in Adams County. And a little bit of a bonus, you're a Big Bend user, annually they pay back dividends to the members. And so that would be a little spiff, sort of an incentive to a business or industry that locates in Big Bend Power Service Area. Yes, ma'am.
So you're asking us to then choose one of these other industries? Is the council have an opinion tonight, or do you want to?
I'm kind of swinging the way Stephen is too, and I think the food and beverage industry is still a viable way. There's a lot of industries out there that don't require a large volume of water that we could still look at and pursue. We have a very good agriculture area. We have a good growing seasons. We have a lot of companies in California that have already started the process of looking this direction because of their lack of water down there.
There is a food processor that moved from California to Washington State to process carrots. So if you're familiar with the baby carrot industry, they're now making and packaging, or planning to make and package those here, just because of the simple cost issues related to water and wages and taxes.
So the city council, the mayor, the engineering firm, the staff, we are actively, like you said, working on our comprehensive plan, which will drive what we predict our growth will be over the next 20 years. We need to plan the type of industries in that plan and the amount of people and water and services we need. We're painfully aware of our lack of water,
mm-hmm.
And the need to develop that. And so this group is committed to moving forward in this process to make that happen. So we've been in, you know, a number of meetings, Steve, and I think you sense the commitment that the city of Othello has. We've received some assistance now. We heard word last week, the feasibility studies from the Department of Health, that Travis wrote the grants for all the area water systems. We received all seven of those grants. We applied for $25,000. We've had communications with the Bureau of Reclamation about construction of facilities. We've been in communication with a new water engineering firm that is going to be advising. Yeah, Aspect Engineering will be advising the city with regarding its water issues. So what we're doing is what you, I think, had said. We're trying to step up our game because we haven't done all the homework we need to do to be ready for more. And so, what, you know, why, you know, so you look at this and why are we in this position where we are? Well, part of it is because we haven't worked together. Each one of us individually are too small to put all this comprehensive of a effort forward. But when you have all these coalition of governments and the Economic Development Council and your services, that is what, and now we've hired the Boyd Company, that is now what's bringing this together. And it wasn't even a possibility before last. I mean, it was always a possibility. We just didn't understand everything that we didn't know what we didn't know.
And I think that that's exactly right. Even one of my bosses, one of the county commissioners, said to me last Thursday that we're in a full court press. And it's as if it's the fourth quarter and we're trailing desperately, if you consider the people that we compete against and the counties around us. But we're in a full court press. We're not going to lay down. We're going to pick up the tempo. Travis and I have had an informal conversation about the growth area for the city of Othello and making sure that there's some thought, you know, given to light industrial and heavy industrial designations, so that we're planning that it's in the right place. I would like to be recruiting specifically to the city of Othello, to the port of Othello, to Shrag, where we have rail, to Ritzville for distribution centers, because we have currently landowners that have offered a total of 2,000 acres to me as available for purchase for the right price. so that we have land to show site selectors. Keith Graham and I have already had a chat at your request with regard to his land in Othello. And we're going to do more of that. We're going to continue to try to build a small roster of the landowners who have not listed their property, but they desire to make their property available for the right purchase, and then we have something to show site selectors when they come calling. But we have to have the team. Hey, we have a good opportunity to solidify team tomorrow when the port and the county and the city meet to talk about a collective in the Othello region to make sure that we're working together first on growth around State Route 26 and Reynolds Road. But over time, I think we're talking about growth in the whole Othello region. And ACDC represents the constant connection for the entire county with the makeup of its board so that it is always talking about collaboration. So I think that we've shined a light on the target. Now we just need to move closer to it.
So, could I get clarification on the intermodal transportation that you're talking about for this distribution center?
Right.
Is that where you would truck containers to a location, offload them, and put them on rail?
Or you would have it coming in from all around the United States to the warehouse and then have it reorganize, reload it, and send it via truck to the shipping ports on the west side. One of the keys about this study, the cost comparative, is that it makes a reference to port and intermodal proximate cities. All 25 cities in this study are dual or triple purpose. They have access to Class 1 mainline rail, they have access to major interstates and highways, and reasonable distance to major shipping ports. We have 6 shipping ports that are on the west side of the state of Washington. So it makes sense that 395 at Lynn, 395 and I-90 at Richville, those are main roads. They're kept clear all the time. They have nowhere near the congestion that they do over on the west side. Trucks can get in and out of plants easy. And if you build it in the right location along Interstate 90, you have access to Class 1 mainline rail where you could either load or unload rail cars. So it's multi-purpose, and that was the reason that you see the name Ritzville on the report. The fact of the matter is, if we find a distribution center that's interested and prefers Bruce or the region around Othello, 17 and 26 and 24 give us options.
I was just wondering if, you know, the questions were posed to the processing facilities here. There were, at time, we were looking at, you know, taking containers and putting them on rail and shipping them to the coast instead of doing the trucking. Because the largest percentage of the product that's produced here in Adams County is being exported
overseas
to the Southeast Asian market that you're talking about. It just seems unusual to backtrack 50 miles, offload it, put it on a rail system.
Well, that would likely be true for a business that's already located here in Othello that has a current plan. What we're talking about is corporations all over the United States that aren't currently set up and distributing out of the Pacific Northwest. Our intent is to recruit businesses that are looking to site here for the first time.
But something like this would benefit the companies that are here as well.
If they so choose, yes.
Yeah.
And increasing the rail infrastructure on Columbia Basin Railroad and improving its short line reach and its ability to deliver to a brand new Connell interchange also makes those types of improvements. Right now, Burlington Northern is very sluggish, picking up and dropping off rail cars at the interchange that have to come up this way, because the Connell interchange is designed to handle 26 rail cars. And quite frequently, Pacific Coast Canola is receiving 110 car unit trains. And when they're dropped off in Connell, they actually physically block the street crossings in the Connell residential neighborhood. And if you were at the curb board presentation, you would have seen pictures from Jed, the city administrator there. He's sitting in a line of cars. It's like a downtown Seattle traffic jam, and it's a small neighborhood road in Connell that's blocked for a significant period of time by rail cars because the interchange is not designed to get those rail cars out of traffic flow patterns. It's one of the big drivers right now to get that done. We've seen businesses here that were using rail that have gone back to truck because of the delays getting on BN's main line. So we'd like to fix all of those projects and start to streamline the ability to distribute our commodities.
Just one other comment, just for consideration. You talk about availability of water. One thing to consider in the future, in the very near future, is the fact that they're going to be relieving those farmers that are on deep water wells east of Othello. Now, that may not benefit the aquifer system that, you know, at this point in time, but there are viable, high-yielding, producing wells in those areas just east of town. They get off of the water, they no longer need those wells any longer. Something can be worked out with the port district or whatever to acquire those wells and those water rights.
City of Connell, again, I'm back to them, but one of the other things I learned all the time I've spent with them on the interchange is that several years ago, they realized that they didn't have enough water rights. And they have Lamb West and President right there, and they have a small port district project in partnership with the Port of Pasco, an industrial park right at Connell. They went out and purchased 1,500 acre feet of water right. And water right, expanding your water right ownership, if it's the right decision, is something that really needs to be considered. Ritzville could not take a food processor right now today without making a significant major investment in acquiring additional water rights. Our best shot at growing food processing of any kind is here in the Othello region. So I think what I'm saying, Mayor Logan, is I'd like to have a tool that I can recruit to Eastern Adams County and a tool that allows me to recruit to Western Adams County that are equally as strong. The other industries that are mentioned in this report, I think they're recruitable. And we have ways to do them and get the outreach done on a smaller basis, but a large-scale employer, we need to know the numbers.
So the council, is there a consensus that you have about them pursuing the food and beverage processing cost analysis survey? Is that the one you think?
It's the most viable.
Most viable.
The most viable.
We have 60 crops growing in Adams County. That's, you know, that's one direction in terms of, you know, available product. And the other thing that occurs is you cite the right food processor, maybe you spawn the growth of a new crop in Adams County.
So what do we do to target them companies that are moving out of California? Because that baby carrot deal that you mentioned, my brother-in-law hauls for them. I forgot the company. But anyway, they went from 500 acres the first year, which was the year before last. Last year, they had 2,000 acres. And they're planning to double that the following year. So that's getting pretty huge.
Well, as you go through your planning process, and we are in the process of encouraging the port to do a master plan process, master facilities plan for Bruce to address things like future growth and future infrastructure. Because all of those things are ongoing. We're going to look at the food processors, A, that are interested in the Pacific Northwest, and we'll have to survey them. And there's a number of different ways to do that. Some of them simply by mind making phone calls, others by using a firm that has access to them to actually do a formal survey about who's expanding and who's looking to expand in the Northwest, and then I go see them. And when I go see them, I carry the cost comparative analysis and a labor force analysis, and I'm able to hand them the base documents that make the argument that this Adams County is a good investment. And that's happening right now today. Yakima's doing that. Tri-Cities is doing that. Grant Canyon is doing that. And they've been knocking on doors and going to the national food shows for 3 or 4 years now. We need to get there. The commissioners have graciously given me a budget that will allow me to travel and recruit on behalf of all of Adams County, not just my agency. And that's my marching orders. That's the full court press.
Yeah, just last week I heard in the news that California farmers are getting 25% less water. I mean, right off the bat, that started, I think, last week. That's not something we'd like to hear, but it's something that's happening that could benefit this area if we get on top of it early enough.
Depending on who you talk to, their drought is the worst in 100 years or the worst in 500 years. And when they're talking about restarting up desalination plants along the California Ocean Coast, to start processing salt water to make it potable water, you know there's a major crisis. Almond growers, very large cash crop in the state of California, they're having to punch wells at great expense just to keep the trees from dying, even if they don't have good yields this year. As any orchardist knows, you have to keep the trees alive because it takes 5 to 8 years to grow an apple. And it will take us 2, 3, 4, 5 years to site, recruit, site, and open a new business here of that size and scope. The Love's Truck Stop took 5 years from day one conversation to the day it opened the door at Ritzville. So, while I'm going 100 miles an hour, please know that it's going to take us some time.
Very informative. Thank you. Well put together.
I plan to come back every time I have something viable to report and keep you in the loop. I'm doing that, making the tour right now to all the cities and towns and making sure they're aware of what's going on and what we're trying to accomplish. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Item 2.02, Public Works update on our current projects. Terry?
Good evening, Mayor and Council. We've got three items on the agenda tonight to update Council on, two that are very active and one that's just basically finishing up. We'll start with Well 6. As you know, the last Council meeting that we've mentioned to you that we'd had a tour out up on the ground, Snyder had it down, tore apart. We found that the bowls were very, very inefficient. A lot of wear, a lot of tear. We looked into a little more efficient bowls, cost, things of that nature. And the bowl cost to basically repair the existing bowls would be $26,000. If we bought new bowls, it'd be $17,000. Our shavs that we currently run in those in that column is 2 15/16. They would need to be replaced. They're at a tune of $148,000 for 74 shavs. Being inefficient with those shafts and those bowls, we downsized to a 2 3/16 shaft to a tune of $48,000. So we're looking at several different ways to put this pump back together to be more efficient and pump more water. We're also looking into a Vistas program for a VFD and some new motor up on top through their rebate program currently. So setting the bottom side up, we can finish up with the top side. We haven't heard anything back from Avista yet on it. We're hoping to, and maybe we can put it together all together at once. I don't know that that'll happen. That's just a hope and a dream, supposedly. But currently we're proceeding down that road, and we're looking at a couple other brands of bowls and see if we can get our costs a little more efficient to spend our money. We know that we've got to have a screen. We know that there's got to be some other things done. Motor's got to be baked and cleaned and bearings taken a look at that. So those are items that will be added to the cost of this as we go along. Moving to well number 9, the transmission line. We've got most of the pipe in. We've laid from the well back to Cunningham and 17. We've laid from Walmart's connection to 17. The only thing we haven't made is that horizontal drilling underneath 17. That's still being worked on. The design has been submitted to the engineering. Engineering has gotten it over to WashDOT. WashDOT's got to look at it for the control zone, the size of the pit. Some of the paperwork's got to be put in. I got to take some pictures tomorrow, send them in to WashDOT so that they can approve that, and then wait for the driller. Currently, the first leg of that has been hotted up, it's been cooked, it's been blowed up, it's been back teed, and it passed, and it's pressure tested today. I don't know that it's passed, but I'm pretty sure it did. They haven't given me that report yet, but that's from Walmart all the way out to where we would bore underneath Highway 17. The other leg will have to wait until we bore under it in order to hot it up across the road at this current time. The sewer, the force main was laid on top of the water line. It was partially covered. The water line was covered with about a foot of dirt, and then we actually CDF'd the sewer line in, and it's ran down there to the corner as well, that 600 feet. I will have numbers. It was asked by council back on the 23rd of February to get some numbers together to break out the sewer portion, and I will have those for the next council meeting on the 13th for council to approve that, that number, that dollar amount. On well number 9, that transmission line, concrete drive, it's just about complete. We've got some rocks to pick on the surface to police up there. The irrigation line has been laid that we ran into. We put it in the ground, we smoothed it all out, it looks real good. We put the ditch back, put the pipe up through the bottom of the ditch, and there's a change order for that that will come as well on the 13th, April 13th council meeting for council's approval, and that's strictly for the irrigation line that we put in the ground in the downtime when we ran into it. The videotape of well 6 still has to be cut and given to Aspect Engineering. I was in contact with Snyder today, and Snyder says that his trailer's up here at Zilla, and he has to retrieve it in order to get that out. So I should have something by the end of the week. So,
okay.
That's pretty much all I have, for, unless you have any questions.
How about well 9 with the Department of Ecology process?
Yeah, I've been in contact with Tim Flynn, and he's been talking to the folks at Ecology, a different set of folks, and he's on vacation all last week, and when he got back, he was going to get back with me and give me an update, hopefully this week, and I'll have a better report, hopefully by the 13th. But it's looking more encouraging, some of the data he's looking at, so more to follow.
What's the schedule for the construction of the building?
That's being worked out with Varilla.
Okay.
They're working on that scope right now.
When do you plan on starting that?
As soon as that scope of work gets finished.
Our goal is by the end of the month?
I don't have the scope of work back yet or the design from Varilla, so I have to wait to get that back from engineering.
Okay. Are you pushing them?
They've got the prints. We gave them to them last Friday for well 8 to duplicate that, and so they're working on that.
Okay.
They're pretty efficient, so we're hoping we'll get that back, get going.
Yeah, there's no reason why we couldn't put the well house in
that's
everything already built until the issues get resolved with the where we're going to take the water from and how much we're entitled to or whatever the heck DOE's got going on with you guys.
Yep.
Everything else can be built ready to go to drop the pump in.
That's the idea.
Because you're coming up against it here.
Right. I'm aware of that.
So you want to be ready. You want to keep going.
Okay.
We're pushing everybody that we can push right now. We just have to wait for the information to come back. So as soon as we get it back, we'll move on.
So Terry, on the 13th, is Larry going to be here to present the change order to the council?
No.
Why not?
He's got another council meeting in Morton, is what he tells me today.
He just doesn't want to be here?
I can't speak for Larry.
I'm not putting you on the spot. I just was
yes, you are.
I asked him specifically if there was going to be a change order on this job that he come back to me and tell me.
And I've asked him twice for both of these, and he's gave me a no.
Let's see. Let's go back. Let's see if Mike Miskimmins can come present as representative of the firm.
Okay.
We'll do that.
Now, when you say that it's coming up for approval before the council, does that mean that we cannot approve it?
That's as council's.
Is that our prerogative?
It's your prerogative to question
the validity.
Change or, yeah. I mean, and that's why a firm representative of that engineering firm should be here to answer questions regarding the necessity and everything else that.
Well, I think I was very to the point and very adamant about the fact that I didn't want to see a change order on this project. If everything had been thought out and it was laid out properly, there shouldn't have been a change order.
Well, that's right. You're right. But as happens with these things
unforeseen circumstances happen. In this case, there was an irrigation line that was supposed to be one place and it wasn't. So it caused a change order in order to adjust for that irrigation line. So we have, you know, don't have a whole lot of control over some of these old irrigation lines out there. And this is an old one. And so, you know, unless we try and overbid the contract and say and cover all exigencies, then we can't cover everything without.
Well, I don't have a record. I don't have a record of the bid. But sometimes there are contingencies put into bids, and I'm without knowing. I don't know if the next highest bid had a contingency in there to deal with unforeseen things that might have come up.
I don't believe it did. We can look at it and see, but I don't believe so.
I think it would be good if we contact Grant Osborne and see if they can get a representative here to answer
that's
questions.
That's what I said we'd do, yes.
I think that'd be a great idea.
Sure.
Anything further, Terry? Council? Thank you, Terry.
Thank you.
Moving on to item three, committee reports. I'm trying to move on. Can't do it. Item 2.03, code compliance discussion. Wait.
Mayor and Council, as you know, about over a month ago, we were asked by Council to re-energize the looking at the code compliance issues here in town, specifically with some of the out-of-compliant buildings that we know exist. So we did. We had the code compliance committee meet again last month. And so what we did was look at where we are with this and a way forward and how we need to proceed. So the first thing, of course, is to gather data. We've pretty much done that. Heather's been out looking, as well as other folks have been out there around town looking for these. And we found about, 40, 45 or so, Heather, that we know of. So once we get serious, we'll gather, you know, more data, obviously, but that's where we're at. The next thing with the CocoPlac committee and we talked about was to get sense from the whole council. So that's where we are tonight for that. And we'll go back to this as I finish up talking about what we're going to need to look at. So then we need to decide on the best course of action. As we research this, we find that in our code book, we already have quite a few OMCs that cover this. And so we have a sort of a basis to start out with. It also gives us a way to enforce it and some other things. So we've got some basis there to look at. So what we need to do then is come up with an enforcement plan. And what does that look like? And probably that would include modifying this based on the options that the council wanted. You know, previously we looked at maybe looking at the non-compliant units and bringing them into compliance, giving them the opportunity to do that. That's what the compliance committee and us looked at, was saying, okay, you've got this building here, homeowner or property owner, that we know is not in compliance, and it's on your property, and you've got people living there, so we'll give you X amount of time to put it in compliance. And once you do, then we'll let you have that person living there. That comes with another set of issues we need to look at, such as zoning and that sort of thing. So it's a multifaceted problem we need to look at. So once we develop that plan on how to proceed forward, then we need to be messaging, you know, talk to the newspaper, talk to the different committees that are different clubs that are out there, talk to the different housing agencies that are out there, let them know what's going on, hold some open houses, some public forums on this to make sure people are aware of what we're going to be doing going forward. And we also need to plan for the negative consequences, i.e. if some of these places are not brought into compliance, then the people will have to leave and they'll be basically on the streets. And that's going to create some negative press perhaps, but if we message this properly, we can limit that, I believe. And then once we get rid of everything that we're going to do, we need to get council approval for all that, just for a modified code, for a messaging plan, for an action plan moving forward. and that action's going to look like, you know, how do we enforce, how do we abate these, some of these places, what kind of fines do we levy, those kind of things we're looking at. Also, as we look at the current codes, and I talked to Travis about this, we don't have the manpower to truly enforce this and catch everything right now. So we probably have to contract out to bring some people on board temporarily until we get a handle on this. Once we do, you get a full handle on it within, you know, 6 months or however long it takes, then we can stay on top of it. But until that, you know, Heather, as hard as she can work the pedal out there, she can never keep up with this, and Travis could never do everything that he's supposed to do in his code and do the stuff he's doing now, develop a comprehensive plan as well as the other things that he does on a day-to-day basis. So that's where we are. At this point, I'd like to open it up to discussion from the council. I know the compliance committee, you know, John and Gina, we talked about this. You missed the last one there, Angel, you were out. But John, you want to add anything there?
Yeah, basically, the reason we wanted Wade to come before you guys tonight is we're at the point right now where we need to do something, you know, about the issues that we've already identified. Once we start doing those things, there's going to be some negativity coming back at us. We didn't feel, as just two members in a committee, to bring that on to you without first bringing it to you and giving you the heads up. But if you want to see, if you want to see the city of Othello grow in an organized manner, in a compliant manner, moving forward, you got to correct the ills that you have today. And that could be unfavorable. It could come to the point, like Wade said, where we're kicking people out of their homes. We could be levying fines against people, substantial fines, for not correcting things. You could end up becoming, you know, you could actually condemning property, you know, that somebody owns. So we didn't feel, as a committee, making that decision was and bringing it all on you, fair to you. So we wanted you to be aware of it.
And the flip side is, if we felt, the committee felt, if we can get a handle on this, then it's going to, and Heather will tell you, you know, it's a growing problem. We discovered probably new ones all the time because the police answer calls to something that, you know, domestic violence or something like that. So it's not a problem that will go away. It's not a problem that will stay static. It's a problem that will grow as the city grows.
And it's been ignored for far too long, and it needs to be taken care of. But you guys need to be aware of the issues that are going to be coming.
The blowback.
Yeah.
The blowback.
Down the road, along with taking care of these issues.
Well, the biggest issue is, what are we going to do with the families that are living in them houses if we have to put them up to code? And we had talked about that the meeting before.
Yeah.
You know, if they want to, if they can get it up to code and they really want to keep renting that, you know, that to garage or whatever it is, then we can go to the cabana or go over here to Cimarron, see if the owner wants to pay for them moving for 2-3 months. That was an option that we had talked about.
And the county, because the county services provide that for them, but for a short-term period. Right now, today, Othello, as Travis has explained in the comprehensive planning and the planning commission meetings, has less than 0.047% vacancy. So as fast as you build a home, it gets bought or it gets rented. Or if something comes out in the newspaper, it's rented. You know, there's just nothing available for them. So I don't know that, here's the dilemma. You're gonna let somebody live in a dwelling that's not suitable to live in simply because you don't have a place to put them? That's the decision you got to make.
Yeah, because then we're opening
it has to get done.
Yeah.
But also we have to think of the families, what's going to happen to the families through that process,
well,
you know what I mean?
I think that's kind of like what we were talking about with the gentleman from ACDC, in that when we start doing something like this, we're going to have to make sure we're partnered with those
integrated health
Housing Authority.
Those organizations that are going to help us to deal with that issue.
Emergency shelter.
There's going to be a lot of different issues that arise from this, and we're going to have to make sure we're partnered and make sure we're ahead of that game in order to make sure that that's taken care of.
I would ask for Kelly to weigh in. We discussed this briefly earlier about some legal issues. Kelly, anything to add on the legal side we might look at?
Yeah, well, what I would recommend for the city council to do is to take a look at your code enforcement sections of the federal municipal code, and there's some things that we can certainly do. We can give the council more tools, or the city rather, more tools on how to enforce the code. Of course, you know, the enforcement policy, I mean, that is something that comes up between the council and the executive branch administration, but we can certainly, I don't want to say overhaul the code, because I think that may be too strong of a term, but the code could use some updating, and I think we can make it much more efficient and give a very certain process that would allow the city to enforce the code, but it would also ensure that the homeowners, as well as the people who are living in those homes, have a way to be fairly treated through the process, and nothing's going to happen without it having, if they don't want it to, without it being looked at by a judge, and make sure that everything is done correctly, and so then their rights will be protected. And I'm not saying they're not protected under the code as it is. I believe they are, but we can set out a very clear, certain process and give city staff more tools to get that done. And I think that would help with a lot of the issues that Mr. Ferris has discussed with council.
So Kelly, what about like an integrated process where we, because it says here in the agenda memo, the current code, OMC 17.7 and 17.9, doesn't give the city many options other than to just force the owners of these structures to comply and evict the renters. And so is there some way that we could, instead of off a cliff enforcement, do something like some form of a, we're going to publicize, as Wade said, we're going to then give the opportunity of each one of these individual landowners to come in to the building and planning department and begin to go over the issues that their non-conforming use presents, and then get a list of the ideas that they or the things that they're going to need to do to bring it into compliance, and have a fire inspection and a building inspection, and then maybe at some point down the road, after say maybe a 3 to 6 month time frame, if they haven't, then those people are subject to the, do you see what I mean, some kind of integrated process, so you give out people the opportunity to voluntarily comply.
Yep.
But if they don't voluntarily comply, then the long arm of the law is going to come down on them, and it's going to get expensive.
The most successful code enforcement programs that I've worked with have that very thing, and I guess I think what I hear you say is kind of a progressive, I guess I liken it to a progressive discipline policy, you know, for an employee, right? I think that's similar to what you're describing, and like I said, there are models out there for Othello to use. The city of Spokane Valley, for example, has a very good code enforcement mechanism in their code that involves that. It's a progressive, basically a progressive route to go. I mean, you issue notice and orders, and the goal is for the code compliance officers to work with the homeowner to get that built up to go. Because the best thing for the city and the best thing for the community, including the homeowner, is if they voluntarily do it. Because it's economically efficient for the city. It gets the goal that the city wants, and it also gets the homeowner. Of course, it's most cost efficient for them. And the renter gets to stay in the structure. So those are the most successful programs, and they're best for everybody. The problem is that when you, and if done successfully, I've seen to have great compliance with the homeowner. Now, it's not always possible. And so when that isn't possible, you do, the city does need to have a mechanism to be able to abate those structures, and then a way to recoup the cost as well. And so you need to have that built into your code. in my opinion.
Council, what do you think?
Review the code and
structure it.
Yeah, structure it so that we have something like that to work with.
You guys like that idea?
So when could that be done?
When? Given everything else we have going on with litigation and some other stuff, I'm not sure, John. I'm not going to give you an answer because I'm not sure.
Well, not like 3 months
as soon as we can.
I'm not thinking 3 months from now. I'm thinking within, you know, 3 to 4 weeks. Could we get you to look at the code?
Oh, we can look at, yeah. We can make progress, yes. But I thought you meant the whole thing.
Oh, no. Well, no, but I would like to vote on it before June.
That would be good, yes. Okay. I would like to get some in place before then.
So that we can
throughout this summer, we can
get into this, keep working on this process. Mm-hmm. I do think I think notification in the paper, in some way reporting that we are working on this to give a heads up.
Yeah, I can work with Tyler to do something.
Yeah. Well, I mean, he's going to probably cite what's discussed here tonight in the workshop. But then we can elaborate on that so that the people of the community are informed that we're considering this and that it's going to be something that's going to be happening. So they might want to start working on it themselves already, you know.
The other thing we have to consider is the zoning piece of this, as far as, because a lot of these are R1, which doesn't allow structures. We're going to have to figure out something to do with our zoning that allows for this to exist. Well, we've talked about that, too, in the committee. So there's, like I said, there's a lot of different facets to this. So we got to make sure we cover all our bases, or we're going to find ourselves, and we start circling back.
You know, there's so many grandfathered things that we're going to have to deal with, issues, because there's building permits that were given for things that were, I mean, I've run across a few things myself, but I don't know that you go back and tear down a building because it's not, you know, you acknowledge it, you say it's here, you fix it so you can use it, or you don't use it.
And that's the goal, is to get to that point.
I was just going to say, I think we focus on the non-compliant issues, the non-permitted. Those are the ones that we really are the number one things we want to look at.
Right. But I don't know that you want to go back through the zoning ordinances and the zoning codes and say, you know, you're in this area, you're allowed to have, if you have X number of square footage in your property, you're allowed to build another dwelling.
No, that's...
You don't want to go back there and go that way.
I'm saying for the existing structures, we got to figure out how to make those work.
They are what they are. They're there.
They are, so we got
to... So why do you have to rezone them?
Just, I don't know, I'll yield to Kelly, but, you know, legally, if we don't do that, I would imagine we would get some blowback from somebody else who says, well, that's existing over there, why not? And if we have an OMC to fall back on, say, well, the OMC says this, this, and this, and that's why. And so if we don't cover that, we'll get there, I guarantee.
Can we put a cutoff date in there, though? I mean, like, from this point forward, that you don't do it?
Those are the details that we have to work out.
Yeah, I think the legal part of this needs to be resolved first, because that's what we'll have Kelly research and bring back, you know, because, like you said, they have an active compliance ongoing operation taking place in Spokane Valley. He's also the city attorney for Spokane Valley, and he can bring us back maybe, if not at the 13th, potentially at the 27th city council meeting, a report of your findings, maybe begin to potentially outline a process that the city would follow and help us begin to attack this particular issue that's going on in the city.
Yeah.
Right?
Okay.
You like that?
Sure. The 27?
April 27th should be good. I can take a look at the code. I can have a report for council. What we won't have by April 27th is, well, what I don't think I could have, I mean, if and I don't think it'd be wise to do it, be efficient, but would be to have a proposed draft of a code provisions for the city to adopt or supplant its current code. I think I can come back with a report, get direction from council, and then I think we would move from there with any modifications to the code that the council would want to proceed with.
Very good. Thank you, Kelly.
Any other questions?
Council?
Yeah, I think I've got the sense of the council then. Thanks.
All right. Item three, committee reports. Are there any committee reports to be given tonight? Unfinished business. Do we have any unfinished business to come before the council tonight? I got a couple. Just a reminder to the council to do their Public Disclosure Commission F1 filings. I think they have until April 15th.
So getting emails.
Yeah, so if you haven't, you can go online. You've got to fill out information. But it does allow you to save it so that the next year you just have to make any changes. So you will get fined, or at least a letter, if you don't have them completed by then. We have a housing survey that Travis has developed. Maybe Travis, could you come forward and tell the council all the different things about the housing survey?
Sure, thank you very much. We have prepared a 20-question housing survey. It is available both in English and Spanish. You can get it in paper from me or at the front counter. I'm also have a commitment to deliver several hundred of them to various churches in town, plus businesses have agreed to put them out for us. It is available on the City of Othello website, so when you log on to the front page, look on the left at the bottom, just underneath the regular column. We've since added two blocks, one for the English, one for the Spanish, so you can just click on it, work through the survey and submit it, and it automatically goes to SurveyMonkey. We have, I also have an email list for anybody who has attended any of the comprehensive planning meetings. I've been having sign-up sheets and taking people's names, collecting their email address. They've been going on a list, which is now at SurveyMonkey, so that anytime I put out a survey, it will automatically go to everybody who has attended one of the previous meetings in the past. So as you come across names or emails that you would like me to add to that list, please send it to me and I will add that. So, but they're available in the back of the room and will be available at least probably through the end of May.
And I would like each council member to complete one of those housing surveys. I will do one myself. You're looking to get how many?
I would like to get 200. We should probably get a lot more. I guess the one thing I need to clarify in that is the big thing with surveys is it has to be scientifically or statistically significant. Because of the size of our population, and I'm not sure how many Spanish responses we were going to get representing that portion of our population, the survey was designed not necessarily to be scientifically verifiable, but since it's a policy and opinion related information, I'm not sure that it's that critical, simply because it is a way to gather input to determine what our goals and policies are going to be. So it's not like we're making economic or land use decisions or financial decisions based specifically on the results of that survey. So
is this survey going to be used in part for information on a comprehensive plan?
Yes, for the housing section. And then I will be doing more additional surveys as we keep going through.
Okay. So council, if you please take Travis's lead and complete one of those surveys, I will as well. Thank you, Travis. The last unfinished business I have is, Spencer, you have a spreadsheet about the amount of time the city has been spending on public records requests, and over the last approximately 4 years, is it? 11, 12, 13, and 14?
About 3.5.
Okay.
Yeah, thank you very much. I was just recently approached to share some information with you tonight about our public records request that we receive as a city. As you know, we get a number of these. We typically get, oh gosh, at least one a day, or it's one, two, is not unheard of to get that every day of the week. And internally, just for our own interest, we're collecting some of this information to see what kind of effect on the city is this having. As you can see, or what this spreadsheet here does is track the value of time that city employees are spending fulfilling these requests as they come up. So we track the hours per month that I and Wade and Debbie and all the other city staff, we track by month the hours that we're spending fulfilling these requests. And I take all that time every month and I enter it into the spreadsheet. And I multiply those hours by the total employee cost. So my cost isn't just my salary, but it's my salary and my benefit cost. So the total cost of an employee. And so we have all the employees down here on the left side of the screen. And then towards the right, we have the total cost to date. As the mayor was saying, from November 2011, that's when the spreadsheet was first started, to when I took it over in 2013, 14, and 15. And in those years, we broke the cost down into the major categories that we are seeing here at the city. And I'm just going to truncate this so we can see the bottom numbers here. So I can see across this 3 years and 4 months, the city has incurred almost $81,000 in expenses related to fulfilling public records requests. This isn't a dollar that the city is spending. It's the value of the time that we're spending. So it's not. You can say it's productivity. $80,000 across 3 years is salary and benefit for a part-time employee. And so that's really the expense here that we're looking at.
Okay, so in that, is there an expense item for the legal costs we've incurred?
No, not yet. Although, no, not yet.
No, so as we go forward, we might want to go back and look at what the legal costs that we've incurred as well. Because we've incurred quite a bit of a legal cost with regard to some of these requests, because one, they're so complex, two, they're not straightforward, and three, they allege a lot of allegations thrown at us in those requests.
You know, when I first answered your question, I was thinking about a different kind of legal request. We've been tracking the hours that our attorney for the last number of years has been spending on those. So that's in here. Yeah, that's the very bottom. City attorney, hourly rate, and other fees.
So the last column is the total?
The 80,000, yes. That's the total for all employees for November 2011 up through today's, up through the end of last month. March. This is a report that I prepare and I give to Wade every month. And so these are costs. These aren't costs that I don't think these are costs that we're tracking so that we can recoup these costs. These costs are hopefully just painting a picture of what city staff is facing here in City Hall.
It's nice to have these numbers when we talk to our legislators, when we try to work on public records request reform with our state.
Yeah, if you think about this, it's not a number that we're looking to recoup, but you look at that $80,000 over 3 years, and that's how much time is being taken away from our staff being able to do their jobs and having to devote to strictly this.
Half of it's legal fees.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it just gives you a picture when you talk with constituents and they're asking you, you know, what it costs for these public records requests, We've identified there are several individuals who are frequent flyers, and these are some hard figures and numbers that we put, that Spencer has put together and has been asked to track. And so tonight, we just had asked Spencer to give an update of that information to give you guys context for the type of activity that our staff is spending and our legal fees that we're spending to respond to these requests.
Ultimately, the Public Records Act is a great thing. Openness in government and transparency, those are great ideas, and I think they're ideas and ideologies that all city staff here, at least in the city of Buffalo, can get behind and support. Those are great things. There's ultimately nothing that we do that is secretive or that we're trying to hide or this. We're here working for the city. We're here working for you as representatives, as public representatives.
And so, really quick. So the 70,000, that almost 77,000, that is just for the individual that we spent in the last 2.5 years.
This is the sum of
39.
Right.
Doesn't it have the numbers or how many public records request all the others would be and the other two?
We keep a report that's looking at the report of what we are cemented by, you know, for last year, how we give it on this board.
So we can get.
We're up to 97 this board.
I think it would be really nice if we could see kind of numbers and reports on a regular basis.
Monthly?
It would be helpful for us.
Quarterly?
Yeah. Quarterly, yeah, a few months. Mm-hmm. I think that would be.
I can include this in the monthly reports that, or every other month. Yeah.
Once a quarter.
Yeah.
That'd be great.
And like Jane was saying, add in how many actual requests
count.
Yeah. That is a count.
Yeah.
Yeah. Can I go back to putting that on the voice? Because I don't think my claim was there for 2015.
Nope.
I want to count. Yeah, you had some serious numbers in 2015.
Yeah, we currently have a 21,000 email request that Debbie's been working on since how long, Debbie?
Months.
January.
So we have right here for
last October.
For Debbie's line, when I look at the January, February, and March, hours 34, 40, 30, and 28.5 hours. It looks like those aren't grabbed into the.
Yeah, so that cost would be more.
The master spreadsheet, yeah.
So in February, she spent a whole week working on public records requests, taking away from her rest of her duties.
We're not the only community faced with this. There's some communities out there that have had hired not one individual, but 2 to 3 individuals just for public records requests.
There are communities out there that are on the verge of bankruptcy because of public records requests.
And so I think you were starting to allude to this, that ultimately this will show a picture of this is what we're doing, and is this abuse or is it not? That we can let Olympia decide, but this is just one more thing that we can pair up with the other cities' experiences, and see if there are ways that we can protect public dollars while at the same time
remaining transparent.
Yeah. Remaining transparent. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Very good, Spencer. Thank you. Is there any other unfinished business tonight? Moving on to item 5, new business. Is there any new business the council would like staff to look into or research before our next meeting?
So we're looking into beautifying Othello, you know, as we go along. And we have that little area right there beside Walmart. They have that swell, and they have that walk path. Oh, well, we got the walk path. That area right there is always tumbleweeds. What can we do about that? That is coming into Othello, and we want our city to look better.
Okay, so
I think that's Walmart's property.
Okay. Talking about the fence and tumbleweeds rolling up against.
Or the stormwater?
Well, the stormwater, and then just south of there, and even a little bit east of there, you got quite a bit of land there. There's probably what, 3-4 acres?
Farmland back there.
No, no, that's Weimel's. I'm talking west of Walmart. Right between the walk path and the swell area that's fenced in. It's a big area.
Have to go out and look at it.
Yeah, and it's, I mean, it's tumbleweeds galore. So we get northerly winds. I'm cleaning out my property. They just spray them, and everything comes into my property.
Maybe what we could do is have Heather go out and take a look at it tomorrow and see if there's any code violations.
Yeah. Well, it's not. We're not looking for any code violations. What can we do about that? You know, driving around the country, I've seen areas like that where they turn them into, you know, very low maintenance dog parks. You know, just put some walk paths through there. And I mean, it's Walmart. They got money. I mean, are we gonna put up with that because they're big cojones? You know what I mean? They're big people, big time. Are we gonna let them do that to our city, or can we do something about it?
Probably what our staff needs to do is contact them and see if they're willing to work with us on getting that cleaned up.
I think what Angel's saying is we go a little bit farther and we somehow get them to realize that it would be beneficial to do something with that property so that it it maintains itself and doesn't need to be maintained, and presents a nice looking area for the town.
Well, it's right by the walk path, so a lot could be done with it, really. Make it a nice looking area between the walk path and Walmart. So, you know, I've checked it out, I've walked it, and it's got a lot of good potential. Not a money making potential. You can't put a building, you know, for business back there, but something, we could, that would be suitable for Othello.
As part of that, the right of way for irrigation.
Irrigation? No.
The drainage.
As a matter of fact, I think a walk path is under that. I think it is. Because I borderline the back of that north of there. And then when the walk path was built, I think that's right under that canal. They covered it. The church covered it, paid for the piping, and the irrigation did the labor work on it, construction work. And I think that asphalt.
Spencer, could you pull up on Google Earth?
I think that was right, which I don't know if that's even legal, but I think it's done that way. So you have 30 feet from the back of my property across the walk path, and maybe another 10 feet that go into Walmart. That's a right of way.
There wasn't anything in the. I wonder if there wasn't something in the building permit for Walmart for their stormwater collection system that dictated how they would finish that off.
We'll be something to look into. Well, it's a dead piece of ground, really. You can't do nothing with it.
But it's still their stormwater collection system.
Well, that's fenced in. So they have that all down to a T. But it's that ground right there.
Okay, where are you referring to now?
Okay.
That triangle where Walmart.
Triangle says, right there?
Where it says Walmart.
Yeah.
I'll use this.
Right here?
Right there. There's a stormwater catch right there. And then this area right here. Right there.
So
this right here. Oh, this right here. This is bigger than what it looks. I think this is, because it's fenced in right along there. Right there. And then you got this whole triangle right here. That's always open to sagebrush and the tumbleweed and everything. Plus all this right here. So
And that's a walk path that goes...
The walk path is, right now, is this one right here, right there. So you can see, look, you can see all this area right here.
Mm-hmm.
Comes down to here, up to here, come down, and then the fence cuts right through here. So you have all this open area. It's a big spot. So that right there creates a lot of tumbleweeds. And if we're trying to clean up Othello, I want my development to look good. You know, that's not why I'm doing it, but I'm doing it. That's part of it. And then for the city also as well.
Is that green area a spillway? Is that a ditch?
That, we're right there?
No, right, yeah, right there. What is that?
Right here? No, that's fenced in up to here.
That's for the water right now for the parking lot.
Yeah.
Okay, but the green area that borders the walk path is...
No, that's just tumbleweeds and stuff. You mean right there?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's just...
Vegetation?
Vegetation.
Mm-hmm. Ain't that where the Bureau had a drainage ditch that they dig?
Well, the drainage ditch is right here.
Yeah. They buried
right
it?
There. Yeah, buried. See that? So it goes right along here. So if you really look at it, the walk path is not right under it, but it takes up about 15 feet of the center of that ditch.
I just think it's something that we need to approach Walmart with.
Yeah.
That's a concern, but it potentially could be code enforcement issue, but if we work with them now before it gets to be a really big problem, have some alternatives for them, like I said, low ideals with, and work with them. I know they're willing to work.
Because if nothing could be done, really, and you can't build nothing for business there,
yeah,
maybe they can work together with the city and put something together there that's going to benefit the city and benefit, you know, the beautification of Othello.
Yeah, there's access to irrigation water there that could put in, like you said, a dog park. Walmart's big on letting people, you know, use their parking lot for overnights and things like that. You know, that would be, as civic leaders, we could approach Walmart and, you know, open discussion with them before it got to a point of enforcement.
Okay. So, Council, what would you like to do?
Well, we can keep it informal at this point.
Okay.
If you want to, Angel, I'll go with you and we can talk to the manager at Walmart and see if there isn't something we can, you know, coax them into helping do.
I think it'd help. Your best approach is going to be if you have some ideas, and I think that they will entertain certain ideas, and so as you think about it and approach them, why don't you let us know what happened at the next council meeting, or if it's later, it's fine, and we'll just you just bring it up under unfinished business.
Yeah.
We'll okay.
Okay. Good.
Yeah. So, Heather, if you still wouldn't mind just swinging by to see if there are any code enforcement violations, that'd be nice. Okay. Thank you, Heather. Okay, so now it's moving on to item 6.01, potential litigation. It's now 8:43 p.m. The council will adjourn and go into an executive session pursuant to RCW 42.30.1101I. So I anticipate that executive session will last 20 minutes. Administrator and legal counsel will remain, and everybody else is free to pick up a housing survey on their way out the door. Hopefully one of those. No action will be taken after the meeting. Okay, we're now back in session at 9:05 p.m. And with no further business, I would like to adjourn tonight's meeting.